We're now ready to begin chapter 50 of the book of Genesis, the last chapter. And in the last chapter of Genesis, we have a record of the burial of Jacob. No other burial in the Bible is given so much long and lengthy detail of an account as this burial of Jacob is given. And this really indicates the importance that was placed on Jacob by God in his plan to redeem mankind. In a very practical way, it emphasizes that when a believer dies, it is appropriate that his body be treated with all due honor and that it be buried in such a way as to give testimony that the one who died believed in the future resurrection of the body and the fulfillment of all of God's promises. So even in death, the body can be a testimony to what this person believed and to what God teaches. And it's significant that nowhere in Scripture is there an example of a believer's body being disposed of by cremation or by any other means other than simple burial. So in Genesis chapter 50, beginning with verses 1 through 3, "And Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. And 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so were fulfilled the days of those which were embalmed, and the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. So when Jacob's spirit left his body and was taken by the angels unto his people, presumably to Abraham's bosom, as we read in Luke 16:22, Joseph fell down on his father, kissing him and weeping. Even though one may believe confidently in a future life, as Joseph no doubt did, and as Jacob no doubt did, and one knows that he will someday be reunited with his departed loved ones, it is natural and proper that he feel and express a keen sense of sorrow and grief at the loss of the loved one. Death is the great enemy and will one day be completely destroyed, according to Revelation 21, verse 4, so there will be no more sorrow or dying in that heavenly place. But for the present time, however, death is still with us, and death does continue to cause sorrow. We read in 1 Thessalonians 4:13, "Nevertheless, we sorrow not, even as others which have no hope." There are people who have no hope. There are others who have no hope of another life after this one, of a resurrection from the dead to be given a glorious place in heaven. They have no hope like that. Their sorrow is different from that of the people of God. After a little while, Joseph controlled his tears and proceeded with the necessary duties for the dead. As God had promised Jacob, Joseph closed Jacob's eyes in death. In Genesis 46, verses 3 and 4, God spoke to Jacob before he went into Egypt. And he said, "I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." So God had told Jacob that this would happen, and here we see that it did happen. We are told that Joseph fell upon his father's face, and wept upon him, and kissed him. This has to be where that was fulfilled. Another scripture that comes to mind here is Genesis 45, verse 28, as Israel was deciding to go into Egypt. And Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die." So Jacob wanted to do that before he died. He wanted to go into Egypt and see his son, Joseph, once he learned he was alive, and so was able to fulfill that desire. So in this sense, Jacob died in a contented state. And after Jacob saw Joseph in Egypt, chapter 46, verse 30 says, "And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I've seen thy face, because thou art yet alive." So Jacob was now contented, ready to die, although it was several years after that a statement was made that he did die, but he died in a contented state. Nothing is said about the reaction of the other sons when their father died. However, there is no doubt that they all loved him dearly, even if not quite so intensely as Joseph did, and they had to have had similar feelings that Joseph had when he died. It was customary in Egypt to embalm the dead using an elaborate process of alteration and treatment of the body, which ensured that its mummified remains would be preserved almost indefinitely. Joseph had his personal physician undertake this process with his father's body, a process which lasted 40 days. It was also customary in Egypt to have approximately a 70-day period of mourning, especially for a person of national importance, as Jacob had come to be recognized since he was the father of Joseph. Not only because he was Joseph's father, though, but because he had come to be honored in his own right by the Egyptians as a true man of God during the 17 years he lived in their country. The Egyptians themselves joined in the mourning for Jacob. And verse 3 says, the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. Verses 4 through 6 say, and when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, lo, I die. In my grave, which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there shalt thou bury me. Now therefore let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. And Pharaoh said, go up and bury thy father, according as he made thee swear. So after the 70-day period of mourning was over, Joseph and his brothers determined to set about obeying their father's request that he be buried, not in Egypt, but in Canaan. This would be easier promised than accomplished. Since the famine was long past, this might be an excellent time for them all to return to Canaan to live. However, the Israelites had proved to be highly productive components of the Egyptian economy, and there might be real resistance to their leaving. Joseph especially was considered indispensable by Pharaoh and his officers. So Joseph, very diplomatically, first gained the support of Pharaoh's officers for his request. He asked them to convey this request to Pharaoh. He assured them the Israelites would all return after the burial was accomplished. Also, he appealed to their strong sense of respect for the dead by pointing out that his father had made them swear a solemn oath to bury him in the grave which he had dug for that purpose back in his homeland of Canaan. Now, the actual cave where these people were buried didn't have to be dug out. It was already there. But each patriarch did have to dig the graves inside the cave for his own personal burial. So Pharaoh could see that the request was well-intentioned. It was reasonable, especially in view of the oath, and so he readily granted permission. And it seems that he also gave orders that this should be recognized as an official Egyptian state funeral with all due honors accorded to the dead. Verses 7 through 9, and Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt. And all the house of Joseph, and his brethren, and his father's house, only their little ones, and their flocks, and their herds, they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company. So the funeral procession consisted not only of Joseph, and his brothers, and their households, only the little ones remained behind in Goshen, as well as the flocks and herds, a fact which assured any Egyptian who might be skeptical that they would come back for sure, but also the servants and elders of Pharaoh's household and all the elders of the land of Egypt. There were many cavalrymen for protection, as well as chariots, probably really wagons. They were used for transportation of food and supplies, and so this made up a tremendous caravan and funeral procession, wending its way up from Egypt, skirting the Red Sea, heading across the Sinai Desert, south of the Dead Sea, then up its eastern shores to the Jordan River. Quite a procession here, coming up from Egypt to bury Jacob. Verses 10 and 11, and they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation, and he made a mourning for his father 7 days. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning on the floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning for the Egyptians, wherefore the name of it was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. So the caravan seemed to have stopped just east of the Jordan River at the site known as the threshing floor of Atad. Atad presumably was a man's name. There the whole group carried out a formal 7-day period of mourning. To all appearances, it was an official Egyptian mourning ceremony and was the object of much attention and discussion by the Canaanites of the area. They later, in fact, gave the place the name of Abel Mizraim, which means meadow of the Egyptians, because of this. They may have wondered what a great body of Egyptians were doing there instead of carrying out their funeral in Egypt. However, there is some evidence that Egypt actually may have had some control of this region in those days. Well, we must bring our lesson to a close at this time. Next time we will begin with the 12th verse of this 50th chapter. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.